Gimel Amud Beis, we're up to Mani, which is 8 lines down from the top. And this Mani is an analysis of the Brisa that we studied on the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Gemara's interpretation of this Brisa on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Beis. So by way of introduction to Mani, to the Gemara's question here, we'll review the basics of the Brisa. You'll see the Brisa if you want to see it inside. We're not going to read it inside of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, 3 lines up from the bottom. And the interpretation of the Brisa on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Beis. The Brisa has a kula, a leniency, and the Gemara is a little bit upset about this leniency. It doesn't fit into the pattern that we have until now. The Brisa allows you to move a mat on Shabbos for the sake of a kaveris. Now the kaveris is this large beehive, you know, it has many different honeycombs inside of it. And the kaveris itself is muktzah. And yet, despite that fact, we have a heter here in the Brisa to move an object which is not muktzah, namely the machzeles, which has many different functions, for the sake of the kaveris. And the kaveris, he wants to protect the kaveris from the heat of the sun during certain months of the year, from the rain during other months of the year. And the Brisa allows it, but adds a proviso, and that is that he shouldn't have kavana to trap the bees. And a simple pshat in this Brisa seems to indicate that this whole enterprise and this whole leniency is dependent upon his kavana. Did he intend to trap the bees by putting the mat over the beehive, or did he not? Now, the first question, which is the question that the Gemara addresses here on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Beis, which we covered in yesterday's shiur, is how are you allowed to move the machzeles, which is a davar nital, that means it's not muktzah, for the sake of the kaveres of the protecting the beehive, which is muktzah. When we have a principle, Rabbi Yitzchak and others, that you're not allowed to move something that's movable for the sake of something that's non-movable, meaning that's muktzah. And we solve that problem by introducing another element here, and that is the chalos. We have the kaveres itself, which is definitely muktzah, but then we have the chalos. The chalos are different little compartments within this gigantic beehive that have honey in them. And the English translation of chalos are honeycombs. And the Gemara says that the only reason we're going to allow you to cover this kaveres, which is muktzah, with a machzeles, which is not muktzah, is because of the dvash that's inside the kaveres. The dvash itself is an edible, and it's not muktzah. So we're going to allow you to put the mat over the kaveres for the sake of the dvash. The Gemara says that makes sense during the summer months, because that's when the beehive and its honeycombs are full of dvash. But what do we do with the winter period? And in the winter period, there's no honey. So you can't tell me that the heter, the leniency of this brisa to cover, to take the mat and cover the beehive during the winter months, is because of the honey. And the Gemara answers that what he does is, he leaves two honeycombs full with honey, carrying over from the summer to the winter. Which means even during Yemos HaGeshem in the winter months, there is honey in the chalos, in these two chalos within the kaveres. So when he puts the mat over the kaveres, he's doing so for the sake of the honey that are in these two, that is in the two chalos, the two honeycombs in the kaveres that were left over from the summer to the winter. And those honeycombs contain honey that's not muktzah. So he's doing it not for the sake, he's not moving non-muktzah for the sake of muktzah, but non-muktzah for the sake of non-muktzah. But now, the Gemara introduces another element here. This was, again, yesterday's Shia, but we have to review it as a jump-off point for today's Shia. And that is that even the chalos, the honeycombs, themselves are muktzah. And why is that? The honeycombs are left in the kaveres for the sake of the dvorim, for the sake of the bees. And anything that's there to protect or serve an animal, a human, a living creature, a balchai, is considered muktzah. And since these honeycombs are there for the sake of the bees use them, that's where they live, that's where they produce honey, and so forth and so on, therefore the chalos themselves become muktzah. And once again, we're back to square one. How can you allow moving the mat over the kaveres, even if I grant you that there's still two honeycombs that were left in the kaveres, in the beehive, during the winter months? You're still moving a non-muktzah item for the sake of muktzah. And the Gemara now introduces an okimta into this price. So the price is talking about a case where on Erev Shabbos he had kavana, that's called chashiv alayu, we had machshava, that he will use the two honeycombs for human consumption. That's called chishiv alayu. And now, when he's moving the mat for the sake of protecting the chalos are not muktzah because of chishiv alayu. Now, if we summarize the brisa, the brisa is going to tell us the following. You're allowed to move the mat, even during the winter period, to cover and protect the beehive because of the two honeycombs left in the beehive, which you designated before Shabbos for your use. And that's called Chishiv Alayu. However, there's one stipulation. And that is that when he puts the mat over the kaveres, he makes sure that he doesn't have in mind to trap the bees. Otherwise, excuse me, Bichai from Aleches Tzeda. Now, according to this interpretation of the Brisa, we're in a little bit of trouble here because we have a machlokes between Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda regarding muktzah. So we have another machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon regarding Dovr Sheina Miskamen. And the way we've been interpreting the Brisa doesn't seem to reflect any shita. There's no integrity in this Brisa because on the one hand, the Brisa requires chishev aleihem, and in the absence of chishev aleihem, we establish an iser muktzah, which is against Rabbi Shimon. On the other hand, if we want to introduce Rabbi Yehuda into the equation and attribute this Brisa to his authorship, based on the fact that we need chishev aleihem in order to remove the iser muktzah, then in the case of covering the kaveris and trapping the bees, the Brisa says it's okay if he doesn't have kavana. Well, Rabbi Yehuda happens to hold Dovr Sheina Miskamen is asur. So Mani, the Gemara says, how do we understand this Brisa? Who is the author of this Brisa? Because Mimonav Shachar in trouble. E Rabbi Shimon. If you can tell me Rabbi Shimon is the author of the Brisa, hence in the case of the Sefer where he is dealing with addressing the issue of Tzeda, since he doesn't have Kavana for Tzeda, it's Mutter. That reflects Rabbi Shimon's Dovr Sheina Miskamen Mutter. But on the other hand, the Reisha says that we need Chishiv Aleihem. And according to Rabbi Shimon, who rejects Muktzah, we'll see what that means, but there would not be an Isur Muktzah with regard to the honeycombs. If the honeycombs could theoretically serve some function, it's not Muktzah. And we don't need Chishiv Aleihem. E Rabbi Yehuda, if you can tell me why we need Chishiv Aleihem to solve the problem of Muktzah, because the author is Rabbi Yehuda, and he holds from Muktzah, but Kilo Miskavi Mayavi, then what do you do with the Sefer with regard to the issue of Tzeda, even in effect that he doesn't, in event that he doesn't have Kavanah to trap the bees, then Rabbi Yehuda holds called Dovr Sheina Miskamen is Asur. So Gemara says, you have to reinterpret the Sefer. Leolam Rabbi Yehuda, the author of this Brisa is Rabbi Yehuda. Umay, and what does it mean? Ubelvad shalo yiskavin lotzud. It doesn't mean what we think it means, that it depends upon his kavana. Is he interested in catching the bees or not? But rather, the question is how he engineers the act of covering this kaveres with the mat, with the machzeles, and the tsuras ha-pu'ula, you know, what does the action look like? There are two ways that you can protect this kaveres by putting a machzeles around the kaveres. One is kimitsuda, and the other is lav kimitsuda. And that's what the Braisa says, umilvad shelo yaseno kimitsuda. That's how we're reinterpreting the Braisa. It's not kavana, but the pu'ula. The action has to be that he's not doing it as a mitsuda. He's not actually covering the beehive, the kaveres, in a thorough way, in which he surrounds the kaveres on all sides with no escape pattern with the machzeles. And the alternative, which the Braisa would allow, is the lishvok lahu ravcha, that although he covers the beehive to protect it from the sun and the heat, but he leaves some room for escape so the bees can get out of there, that it shouldn't be a situation in which there's tzeda, the mela, meaning even without kavana, because Rabbi Yehuda is the author of this price and he holds Dov Shenim's Kavit is also, but now he's not doing a pool of tzeda. Why? Because he's guaranteeing that towards the bottom of this kaveres, you know, where the mat only reaches down to a certain level, but below that, there's plenty of airspace for the bees to fly away. So if he encircles the entire kaveres, that's prohibited because that's an act of trapping. If on the other hand he leaves space, he leaves open area for the bees to fly away in the bottom of this kaveres, that's not tzeda. And that's what this price is stipulating as a condition in the heter of using the mat for the sake of covering and protecting the kaveres. You've got to do it in a way where it's not tzeda. But again, in terms of your ability and your permissibility, I should say, to cover the mat, cover the kaveres with the mat, and you're using a davar sheino muktzah with a tiltil for the sake of a davar muktzah, the answer is it's not muktzah because it was chishev aleihem, because on Erev Shabbos he designated these chalos for his own personal purpose. Now, at this point, in order to introduce Rav Ashi into the equation here, we go back to the original kasha of the Gemara. The question was, how are you allowed to move the mat for the sake of covering the kaveres when there's no honey in it during the winter months? And the first answer before Rav Ashi is now about to appear on the scene was that during the winter months he has honey in the kaveres because he has protected and left over two honeycombs that are full of honey during the winter months. Rav Ashi offers another possible solution to this problem of how we could use the mat to cover the kaveres. And Rav Ashi Omar, he comes back to the Braisa to be medayik in the language of the Braisa. Miktoni b'yimos hachamo b'yimos hakshamim. The Braisa doesn't mention that we're talking about different periods of time, different seasons in the year. That would have been yimos hachamo, yimos hakshamim. But that's not what it says in the Braisa. The Braisa says b'chamim ne'achamo b'gshamim ne'akshamim k'toni, which means that there are certain periods of time in the year where you have both sun and you have rain. So there's an overlap of both kinds of weather conditions. And we're talking about Yom Nisan and Yom Tishrei. In Yom Nisan, we're at the beginning of the spring, but there's still rain. Like, for example, here in Eretz Yisrael now, we have rain, and it's Nisan. We're already up to the 16th of Nisan, it's still raining out. And then you have Yom Tishrei, which is the end of the summer, the beginning of the autumn months. And once again, we still have some of the summer conditions of the hot sun, but we also have rain coming down. It's the beginning of the rainy season. I mean, we actually postpone praying for rain until the 7th of Cheshvan, but already during Tishrei, there could be rain coming down. So what we have now in this beehive, in this kaveres, is ikadvash. There's actually honey in the beehives, because it's not the winter months. Rather, it's the beginning of the summer or the beginning of the winter. It's the autumn, the end of autumn, or I should say beginning of autumn. and there's actual dvash inside this kaveres. And that's why the Braisa permits you to move this mat and the machzelas, which is not muktzah, to cover and protect the kaveres. And you're allowed to do that on Shabbos because this is not a violation of Yitzchak's rule of a dover sheino nital, that you're not allowed to move a dover nital itzorach dover sheino nital, because there is dvash. And if there's dvash, then dvash is not muktzah, and when he protects the kaveres, in effect he's protecting the dvash, and therefore even according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you'd be allowed to move a non-muktzah item for the sake of the kaveres, but really it's for the sake of the dvash that's inside the kaveres. Amalu Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes wants to bring a support for Rabbi Yitzchak. Puku vi imrule, the Rabbi Yitzchak go out and tell Rabbi Yitzchak kvar tiguma Rav Huna l'shmaitek bebovel. Rabbi Yitzchak is in Eretz Yisrael, and he tells you that you're not allowed to move a non-muktzah object on Shabbos for the sake of a muktzah object. And Rav Sheshes notifies Rav Yitzchak with the good news that in Bavel, Rav Huna, the Gadol of Bavel, is already presenting your teaching on his own. So you are on the right path. You're meeting some very good friends on the way, and that's Rav Huna in Bavel. The Amar Rav Huna, Osim Mechitzel Emes Bishvil Chai. V'ein Osim Mechitzel Emes Bishvil Mes. So we have now a dead body, a corpse, that's called a mess. And the status of a mess is muktzah. It's like Eitzim Avonim, it has no purpose. Now, if the corpse is left in the sun, like if you remember we discussed the David HaMelech's death on Shabbos, out in the orchard there, so we want to get the corpse out of the sun, or at least protect the corpse from the sun, because otherwise it's going to cause a stench, it's going to cause a terrible situation of the of nivel ames, of a situation that's terrible for the body's disintegration. So we want to protect the mess from the sun. So what we want to do is we want to take a mechitza, and we can translate the mechitza as a wall usually, but here it means more a covering, like in the case of an umbrella. So we're using this this mechitza as an umbrella to protect the mess from the sun. But says Rav Huna, you're not allowed to move this mechitza for the sake of a mess, because then you're moving a davar hanital for the sake of the davar she'eino nital, the mess is muktza. But if you do it for the sake of the chai, for the sake of the living person, which we'll explain how that works out, then it's okay. So the Gemara now is going to clarify what Rav Huna meant when he said, well, you could set up the mechitza on top of the mess to protect the mess from the sun, but only if you do it l'tzor chachai. What does that all mean? Maihi. Tiomar Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda v'chem tana shila mori ma hamutal bechama mes hamutal bechama, if you have a dead body that's in the sun and this is causing a speedy process of disintegration of the body, of the corpse, is boim shnei b'nei yodav yoshim b'tzido. We have now a very elaborate discussion and description of how to engineer a heter, which we can get this mechitza on top of the mess. You have two people, alive and well, who will, let's say, lay themselves down on both sides of the corpse. And cham lehem milamata, the earth is hot, and during the heat season, and now they bring a bed or something to separate their yashvan from the karka. So zeh may be mitav yoshvel on this side, and zeh may be mitav yoshvel on the other. They bring some sort of bed, and they lie down on the bed, or they sit down on the bed, and that's going to protect them from the heat on the bottom. So that's perfectly okay. No iser was involved, no muktzah, no nothing. Now they begin to feel the heat of the sun that's beating down on top of them. So they want to now protect themselves from the sun. So if they move a machzelus, it's a dovra nital, it's a non-muksa object for the sake of their own benefit, to protect themselves from the sun, that's litzorach dovra nital. There's no problem. So what do? Mevi'im machzelus uparsin aleihem zezokef mitoso v'nishmat v'holich lo v'zezokef mitoso. Okay, fine, v'nishmat v'holich lo. So first and foremost, they bring a mat, a machzelus, and they basically spread it over both of them. Imagine they both, you know, shoot their arms up into the air, holding on to a corner of this mat on both sides, and in between them is the mess. So the mess is now protected by the mat. Well, I don't know if you can expect them to stand there holding the mat on both sides for the rest of Shabbos. That's humanly impossible. So what we offer is the following possibility. That you can set up this machzeles as a kind of an oel, a kind of a temporary covering or an awning over the mess. How? Each one will set up his bed now as he moves out of the bed in a way that the machzeles is still attached to both of these beds, but let's say to the right side of the bed on this side, the left side of the bed on that side, and the left side, and it sort of hooks onto the bedposts, if you will, or the bedsides. V'nimteis mechitza asuya me'aleha. He's not setting up a mechitza. The mechitza's there already. He's just sort of wiggling his way out, off the bed, and now the mechitza's there, and where is it? The mechitza is covering, as an awning, the mess. So he's accomplished his goal, and he never moved anything that was non-muktzah for the sake of muktzah, because he moved it for his own sake, to protect himself from the sun. Both of them did the same. And then they were able to, as we said before, wiggle their way out in such a way that the awning remains as an awning, functioning now to protect the mess. But they didn't set it up as a mechitza. It was meila. Meila means it was by the by. It became mechitza, not through any action of their own. So they never actually moved the machzelus for the sake of the mess. And all this is a reflection of Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion that you're not allowed to move a non-muktzah object for the sake of a muktzah object, a kli hanital for the sake of a kli she'eino nital. And that's why you weren't allowed to, let's say, bring the beds or the mat out for the sake of the corpse, but rather you have to do it for the sake of the chai, the living. And this was the strategy, the very sophisticated, elaborate strategy, which Rav Shesha says, and quoting Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda and so forth, what was encouraged and recommended in order to solve the problem of the mess lying in the sun. Now, we have to also add another element in the equation. We've been talking and focusing on the muktzah issue. There's another issue here about setting up an oel. And that's a toldo meleches bona. But we're going to say that meleches bona only applies to an ol keva, but not to an ol aroi. So if you have a temporary ol, that's only osim in rabbanon. And the rabbanon are only going to ask her to creating a temporary ol if you do it kedarko, if you set up the ol in the way that everyone sets up the ol, which means that you put up a pole here on this side, call it the left side, a pole on the right side, and then you put the roofing on top of these two poles. That's the normal way you could create an oel. Here, he's already got the roofing up, even before he sets up the poles, so to speak, on both sides, the beds on both sides that are going to hold up this awning, this oel. So when you combine A plus B, number one, we're talking about an oel aroi. It's only a temporary oel. That itself reduces it down to a derabbanan. He has not violated meleches bona d'oraisa. On top of that, he's doing it in a very unusual way. He's setting up the awning or the roof first, and then the poles that hold up the roof second. And that we're going to allow. So we basically have now solved two problems. We solved the muktzah problem. And how do we do that? Because we had the two people lying on both sides of the mess, and they're boiling in the hot sun, so they can bring a machzeles, which they will stretch from one side to the other side. This Reuven's holding it on his side, Shimon on his. And that's a dovra nital, it's a dovra nital, because they're doing it for themselves, the chai, not for the mess. and we've solved at the same time the problem of Melechus Bona by creating an OL, insofar as we have set up the OL, the rooftop, before the poles that hold up the roof. Itmar, the Gemara now offers a few different methods of protecting the dead body from the sun on Shabbos. Mesa buta b'chama, so the corpse is lying in the hot sun on Shabbos. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, hofcho mi mita limita. According to Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, you're allowed to do what's called tiltul menatzat, even though the corpse itself is muktzah. But what you do is you turn it from one side to the other. You you roll it onto one bed, and then from that bed onto another bed. And basically, you're always doing what's called tiltul menatzat. We'll talk about that in just a minute. And Rav Chanina bar Shleima mishmei de Rav Amar meniachal of kikar otinok umetaltalo, which is familiar to us from the sugya that we had at the end of Bamim Adlikin, after David HaMelech dies, and what the Rabbanan allowed Shlomo HaMelech to do to get David out of the sun, and that was to create a kind of a tiltul muktzal litzarat avashenu muktzal. Even though you're, let's not be dishonest about it, he is moving the mess, he's moving the corpse, but nevertheless, since there's a avashenu muktzal on top of the corpse, and the Gemara gives these two examples, but anything that's not muksa can be placed onto the corpse. These are relatively light substances, like a light loaf of bread or a child. And we're going to consider it as if he's moving not the mess, but rather he's moving that which is on top of the mess, which is the kikar atinok that's not muksa. And apparently this kind of a heter, which is formulated here by Rav, is limited to the case of a mess. We have an issue of covered a mess, and we want to protect a mess. We're going to allow a agav tinok or kikar situation where, you know, you have to be honest, he's not really moving the kikar tinok. I mean, the kikar tinok get moved mimelo automatically, but he's really moving the corpse, but we're allowing him to do that based on the fact that he's sort of acknowledging awareness of the Iser Mukta by doing this action of putting a kikar tinok on top of the mess. But for the sake of covered up mess, we're going to allow this to go on. So now the Gemara wants to know, what is the machlokes between Shmuel and Rav? I mean, Shmuel advocates hofcho mimita lemita, which we call tiltul menatzad, whereas Rav advocates meniach lav kikar otinok. Heichadika kikar otinok liyamalo pli lishar. The Gemara analyzes, and even Shmuel would agree that if you have the option of a kikar otinok that's available, so he has access to a non muksa object, that certainly everybody agrees would be matir, moving the corpse. Ki pligi but the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel is the lesle, in a case where he doesn't have access to a kikar tinok. Can we permit moving the corpse through this indirect method called tiltul minatzat? Marisov, according to Rav, tiltul minatzat. No, just 1 second. Rav was the one who said kikar tinok. Yeah, according to Rav, he would not allow you to do this tiltul menatzad of rolling the mess from one mita to the other, because tiltul menatzad shmei tiltul, that's also included under tiltul. Which means that the iser is to change the makom of muktza, not the act of tiltul. So if you could magically cause a muktza object, say abracadabra, and it would jump and it would move to another place, that would be also going to Rab, because we're looking at the relocation of the object of muktza. Whereas Ma'asov, according to Shmuel, lo shmei tiltul, that when they prohibited the maisa tiltul, and this is not a maisa tiltul, this is not the normal way you would do tiltul. So the Gemara is a little bit upset about the fact that Rav and Shmuel, ke'ilu, as if they had discovered America, and they decide to fight out this issue in their generation of tiltul menatzad, whether it's called tiltul and it's a violation of the Isur tiltul muktzah or not. Lema ketanoi. Isn't this a little bit strange? We can find this machlokas ready in Tanoim, and Rav and Shmuel should have pointed this out to us. Ein matzilin es ames mipnei adleika. Now let's go back to basics here. There's a whole parak in Masechet Shabbos dedicated to this whole issue of hatzolah mipnei adleika. We don't want to get too involved in saving things from a fire, because once he gets involved in that, he may come to put out the fire, to extinguish the fire, which would be a meleches kibui. So they limited the amount quantity or quality of those objects that are permitted. You're permitted to save them from the dleika. And again, permission A, because otherwise we're afraid he might put out the fire, but we're going to allow it in these cases. Or alternatively, we're going to allow him to take out these objects into a karbalis, which would normally be osur. So what are the objects that we're allowed to take out? One of them, according to one Tana here in this braisa, is going to be the mess. And that's the Tana Kama. And that's going to be Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, the second Tana in this price. The first Tana Kama says, "Ei matzilus ames mnei adleika," that amongst the very limited list, enumerated list of heterim of objects that you're allowed to save because of the fire, mess is not on the list. So there's no heter, there's no leniency in allowing you to move the mess in the case of a fire. Omer Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, Shamati, I heard, I have a tradition, and I would like to transmit this tradition, Shematzilin es ames mipnei adleika, that when there's a fire, then amongst the various objects that you're allowed to save from the fire, one of them is the mess, the corpse. So the Gemara asks the following question, Heichi Domi, what's the exact scenario? Idi Iko Kikar Tinok, if he has the availability of a loaf of bread or a child, my time in the Tanakhama, why does the Tanakhama say that you're not allowed to save it? Why? Well, why is there a muktzah problem over here? The Gemara right now is not dealing with the issue of karmelis that we said before. But as far as the issue of muktzah is concerned, everybody agrees, even Rav and Shmuel in the previous sugya agreed, that Kikar Tinok was a leniency. So why would the Tanakhama prohibit this? Ein matzil in a sms. But idelek, if there's no access to neither an infant nor a loaf of bread, is my time in the Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. What could be the possible justification for moving the mess according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish when he says Shamati Shemat Silin Es Hames Mipnei Adleika? Ella, by process of elimination, the Gemara doesn't know of another option. Lav, shouldn't we assume that Betiltul Min Atzad Pligi, let's start with Mar Sover Lo Shmei Tiltu. That's Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. He holds that what you're allowed to do is roll the mess from one bed to the other, just as we saw it prescribed by Shmuel above. And he holds that Tiltu Minatzad Lo Shmei Tiltu. So I have a solution to the problem of moving the mess and saving the mess from the fire, even in the absence of Kikar Tinak, but the Tanakhama of Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish is of the opinion that Tiltu Min Atzad Shmei Tiltu. And therefore, by rolling the mess, you don't solve the problem of Tiltu HaMess. That's considered a violation of Tiltu HaMuktza. And the other option of Kikar Tinak wasn't available. So, Rav and Shmuel, why are you debating an issue as if you invented this issue and you were the first to address it with the country? Why not just quote this braisa, which records a machlokas tanoim? Look, so the Gemara now reinterprets the braisa. Kuli alma, all the tanoim in this braisa agree that tiltul min atzad shmei tiltul. And that would support the opinion of Shmuel that we mentioned above. And with respect to muktzah, you can roll the mess from one bed to the other. and that would not be a problem of Tiltul Mukta. Haini Tam Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. You'll ask me, why does Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish have to come up with this heter that you're allowed to move the corpse by using Tiltul Minatzad? And everybody agrees that Tiltul Minatzad is Shmei Tiltul. What kind of heter is it to roll the mess if Tiltul Minatzad is Shmei Tiltul? I mean, I understand Tanakam very well. If it's a violation of Yisur Tiltul, even if it's Minatzad, if it's indirect and you roll it from one bed to the other, that makes sense. So you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. But why would Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish permit it? The answer is, Mitoch Shadam Bol Al Meso. And now we turn to Daf Mem Dalet Amud Beis. Ilo Sharisle Asi Lichbuye. Remember that we said earlier that there's an enumerated list of objects that you're allowed to take out from and save from the fire, each one for its own reason. Let's say we'll have a discussion about Kisvei HaKodesh, you know, holy books. And here, in the case of the corpse, what we have to be afraid of is that he might come to put out the fire. If you don't give him permission to save the corpse, he may go ahead, and in order to save his corpse from the fire, he is going to put out the fire. So here's a special leniency, a special heter that they were matir, Tiltul Minatzad. Again, they didn't go all the way and say, well, let's just ignore the halachas of Muktzah and the Isur Muktzah. No, that they didn't go. They said, just come up with this Tiltul Minatzad, which is not something that normally we would allow. It's a little bit of a harama here, but we're going to allow this harama because the alternative is he might put out the fire himself and violate Melecha Es Kibbut. Now, the Gemara kind of wants to paskin halach l'maisa. What do we do in the case of a corpse that's about to be carried away by the fire, consumed by the fire? Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Shilom Ravasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, halach Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish b'mes. We're going to accept Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, and we're going to allow you to move the mess in that tiltum and atzad kind of method. And how much more so if it was Kikar and Tinok. And all this is to avoid a possibility that the man is just so bohul, he is so preoccupied and just out of touch with intellectual cold thinking that he's going to end up putting out the fire. And that's how we're going to paskin. We're going to allow this Tiltul Minatzad to save the corpse from the fire. And this is a special heter because of the extreme distress of a person who's trying to save his mess from the fire. Now, some Rishonim say that within the context of this halach l'maisa, halach Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, we don't even require Tiltul Minatzad. If we're really afraid that he might put out the fire, just tell him to save the corpse and get it out of there, out of the way of the fire. Other poskim will say, well, if there's a possibility of saving it in a way that would be more or less mutal, like Tiltul Minatzad, when I say more or less, we might be holding Tiltul Minatzad Shmei Tiltul. But if he's, you know, he's in a very, very tough situation, you know, the fire is coming quickly, then he might be, if in Shasat Chak, he might be allowed to move the corpse directly. Now, how do we paskin in general on Tiltul Minatzad? Most Rishonim agree that Tiltul Minatzad Shmei Tiltul, and it's Asur. But the accepted view, which you'll see in our Chaim, Shin Yud Aleph, is a middle-of-the-road kind of a sheet. This reminds us of the principle called Halacha Kediri HaMachriya, a compromise sheet. Why are you moving the object? Are you moving the object because you want to move the object which itself is not muktzah? Or are you doing this tiltul minatzad for the benefit of an object that is muktzah? So, for example, the case of mess, the tiltul minatzad of which you roll the mess from one bed to the other is being done for the sake of the mess, which is muktzah. But let's say, for example, you would have an object of muktzah that's partially covered by muktzah. An object that's not muktzah, I meant to say, that's partially covered by muktzah. Let's say you had a radish that was partially covered by the dirt. And you could pull out the radish, minatzad, And it means that the earth is going to fall and move, and that's indirect. But your purpose is not to move the earth. Your purpose is just to get the radish, which is a davar ochel, it's not mukta, out of the earth. So we might be tempted to accept this opinion in Shulchan Aruch of those Rishonim that will allow tilt minat tzad as long as the following proviso is fulfilled. Your movement is done for the sake, the ultimate goal, of a non-muksa object. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, Mosar Hashemin Shebenev Shebekara Osu Rab Shimon Matir. In other words, when you have, and this can be the subject of the next sugi, when you have something that entering into Shabbos was mukta, but during the course of Shabbos it no longer is mukta, meaning the siba, the reason that generated the mukta, is gone, so that while the shemen was burning, entering into the Shabbos, then the shemen was mukta, but now the candle is extinguished, the light is out, and you have leftover shemen. In a ner, which is a receptacle, in a kara, which is a larger bowl. So what's the status of that mosa shemen shemen ner? Well, the Tanakhava, this price holds, it still remains muktzah. And the reason for that is a migu principle, which we're going to get into in Mirtz Hashem, called migu niskatzol min hashmashol, siskatzol kul yoma. If going into Shabbos it was muktzah, remains muktzah for the balance of Shabbos. And that's the shita Rabbi Yehuda, who has a more machmir shita of mukta, and Ben Hashmash is going to determine the status of this object for the rest of the Shabbos. And since you didn't do Hakana before Shabbos, because during Ben Hashmash also it was mukta, therefore it remains mukta the entire Shabbos. Whereas Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, would say that we don't hold from Migu Diskatzol Ben Hashmash. Even if it was mukta going into Shabbos during Ben Hashmash, that doesn't mean that it's automatically mukta for the entire balance of Shabbos. But if we have a Yoshev and Mitzapa, which we'll talk about at great length in the next sugya, Mirza Shem, where he's waiting and anxiously assuming it's going to be Ois Mukta, that the reason for Mukta is going to dissipate, then once that reason for Mukta dissipates, it evaporates, it's removed, then the Isa Mukta is removed. And we don't have this Migu principle that since it was Mukta going into Shabbos, therefore it's Mukta the entire Shabbos. That's Rabbi Shimon. Now, we're about to start the new Mishnah here, which is about six lines down from the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. And this is one of the most fundamental Mukta Mishnayos that there are. Again, Mukta is a sugya that probably, I'm just guessing, comes up about 25 or maybe even 35% of Masechta Shabbos. And this Mishnah is one of the most fundamental breakthrough Mishnayos in creating categories of Mukta and calculating the various shitas of Mukta. So we're going to start with Ner. Ner, again, as we said a million times, is the receptacle that holds the oil. And you have something which is called a Ner Chadash, which means that you've designated this receptacle for purposes of a candle, to pour oil and put a wick in and light it, but you've never used it on any occasion. It's brand new. Then you have a Ner Yoshev, which has been used already in the past. This is a receptacle. Now he wants to use it this Shabbos for some other purpose. Or, alternatively, he wants to be metaltel, this Ner. He wants to move it around. And this introduces a concept called Mukta Machmas Mius, Mem Aleph of Samach, which means there's something repulsive about it. What happens is that once you use a receptacle as a lamp, and you light the wick inside that's floating in this oil inside the receptacle, inside the nair inevitably becomes soiled, you know, from the grimy and the oily substance, it sort of blackens. And a person, in his mind, you know, the last thing he wants to use is a Ner Yoshon. It's Pashut Mos. However, let's admit that it still is a Kli, it has a function. You know, it's not comfortable using it, but you could use it. You know, it reminds me a little bit of you know, Gemaras and Brachas and elsewhere about drinking out of a certain cup or a certain receptacle that was designated for urine or so or something. Yeah, you have a sephel that you wash your hands with, and some people are very makpid not to drink out of that sephel, you know, because it's used to wash dirty hands. Others are a little bit less aesthetically sensitive about that, and they'll drink out of a sephel. But generally speaking, we don't use a kli, a ner, that has already been used in the past. It's soiled, and especially if it's made of cheres, you know, of earthenware, it's got plenty of filth in it. Very difficult to polish it up. If you did polish it up, then it would probably have the same status as a ner chadash. So the Mishnah makes the distinction between ner chadash, where there's no mos, and that's mutabitiltil, as opposed to a ner that's been used in the past, and it's mos, and therefore it's muktzah. Now this reflects the Shita Rabbi Yehuda, who accepts muktzah. And he put, you know, in his mind, he has he's designated this ner for lighting a lamp. He doesn't want to use it for any other purpose because it's mos, it's disgusting. Rav Shimon, on the other hand, hold kol aneris metaltalin. In other words, there's no such thing as muktzah machmas mius in halacha. I mean, you know, you might have something in reality that's a little bit repulsive, but it still has a function. And if it has a function, there's almost an automatic assumption going into Shabbos that's muchan, that in event that I will need this kli, then I will use it. Did he think that out? Certainly not. But he never excluded it, and he was never mafkia the shame kli. It's still a kli. A kli that could be used for many different purposes. This reminds us of a sugya that we had earlier in Bamevad Likin about the shofar. And the shofar could be used, theoretically, legabea boas hatinok, to, you know, to feed the tinok some liquids. And that's enough from Rav Shimon's perspective, as long as it has some sort of theoretical use. Now, is there an entity, an enterprise of muktzah, category of muktzah, that even Rav Shimon agrees? Yes, there is. Hold on to your seats here. Chutz min haner adolek b'Shabbos. You have a candle that's lit on Shabbos. Now, what that means is that the receptacle, the oil, the wick, the whole ganze business is all muktzah, because it's lit. Now, we said earlier, if you recall, right before this Mishnah, that if he anticipates the moment in which the light is, you know, goes out, and there still be oil left in the receptacle, that's okay. I mean, that's not lit. But as long as it's lit, it's muktzah. When it goes out, if he was Yoshiv Mitzap, if he anticipated that it would go out, then from that moment on, it's not muktzah. It went out. And let's add the following terminology here, and that's called muktzah machmas isur. Imagine if, while during the time period when this ner is lit, he would want to take out the oil. If he took out any amount of oil, that would be meleches kibui. So this candle is dedicated for isur right now. I mean, it's an isur situation. You can't deal with it while it's lit. And that's something that even Reb Shimon would accept. But again, it doesn't necessarily mean that Reb Shimon is accepting and acknowledging a category of muktzah. He might be just simply saying that there's a separate iser here in tampering with the oil, etc., etc., of this ner that's lit because of a gzera that he may come to do kibui. And that puts it into a different category. Lemaisa, these two approaches, which I'll reiterate and review one more time in a second, are a matter of a shaklavitarya in the sugya later on daf mem vav, almost mem zayin. And the Gemara is going to have an explanation of Rabbi Shimon here in our Mishnah that there's a gzera shemi yechabe. The Gemara is going to say, well, That's a Dovr Sheni Miskaven, Malach Sheni Tzuchuf, who knows what, so that's not a reason. And the Gemara is going to finally conclude that the issue here is a category of mukt. So we'll call it a basis l'dovr aser, whatever kind of muktzah, muktzah mafas iser, whatever definition we'll come up with. Rashi here, paradoxically, interprets the sheet of Reb Shimon here in our Mishnah as simply a gzeirah shem yechaveh, which is the Havamin of the Gemara, which is ultimately rejected. So that's a little bit interesting that, and perhaps this is methodologically true, that Rashi on the Mishnah always interprets the Mishnah in light of the Havamin of the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Now, a Brisa is going to introduce a third sheet into the equation. Because so far, we have Machlok Shin, the Tanakama, and Reb Shimon, which we want to identify as the Machlok Shin, Rabbi Yehuda, and Reb Shimon. And now, the Brisa that we're about to learn is going to introduce a third sheet to Rabbi Meir. So let's read the Brisa. Torah Rabbanan. Metaltelin ner chadash avalo yashan. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So that is an exact copy of the Tanakhama Vam Mishnah, and that's what we called, if you remember, Mukta Machmas Mius in the case of Aner Yosha. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Aneris Metaltelin, Chutz Min Aner Shehidliku Bo B'Shabbos. So let's emphasize those six words, and in contrast to Reb Shimon, who is the last Shita, presented here in this Braisa, and that's Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah. Look at his language. He says, Chutz min aner hadolek b'Shabbos. So if we do a comparison here between Rabbi Meir's Chutz min aner shehidliku bo b'Shabbos and Rabbi Shimon's Chutz min aner hadolek b'Shabbos, then we come to the following conclusion, that Rabbi Meir, although he rejects Muktzah Machmas Mius, he's Mekil vis-a-vis Rabbi Yehuda, the first part of the Mishnah, he's Machmir vis-a-vis or relative to Rabbi Shimon, who's the most Mekil in the Mishnah, comes later, in his price, excuse me, because as opposed to Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Meir accepts the principle of Migu, which means the following. Let's take Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that as long as this a lamp is lit, it's Muktzah. Again, what the reason for that is, whether it's Gzeira, whether it's Muktzah Machmas Iser, we don't have the terminology yet to classify it. But basically, there is this category of Muktzah. But that's because the lamp is lit now. Once the lamp goes out, it's Mutter. Rabbi Meir says no. That since he lit this candle on Erev Shabbos, then during Bein Hashmashos entering into Shabbos, it was Muktzah, albeit not Muktzah Machmas Mius, but Muktzah Machmas the Iser of Adlaka, and it remains Muktzah of the balance of Shabbos, even if the Sibas HaOser is gone. In the minutes, even when the lamp is extinguished, everything still remains Muktzah because of this principle of Migu, that if it was Muktzah going into Shabbos, it's Muktzah of the entire balance of Shabbos. That principle is rejected by Reb Shimon. He's the most lenient of all these three shittas in the Braisa, and he doesn't flinch about being matir use of this oil and lamp once the flame goes out, because going into Shabbos during that Bein Hashmashos period, although it was lit, he already anticipated that, you know, when the hour comes, it'll be extinguished. That's called Yoshev Metzapa. Well, now Rabbi Shimon says, Kovsa Mutal Taltala. Once it goes out, generally speaking, you're allowed to move it. We're not going to apply the principle of Migu. However, Avokosu Ka'ara Vashishis Lo Yazizem Mimkoma. Which sounds like, in this case where the oil was held in a cup or bowl, a beaker, and there's a significant amount, the volume of oil, then that oil remains muksa for the entire Shabbos. Meaning that here it is eno yoshev u'mitzapa. He doesn't anticipate that this lamp would go out. There is a significant volume of oil in the kos kara shishas, such that he doesn't think the flame would go out. All of a sudden, I don't know, a wind came, somebody opened up a window, and it blew out. So Rav Shimon says in such a case, where he didn't anticipate that the nair would go out, then it is muktzah. There's no yoshiva mitzapa, there's no anticipation. So it seems to me, again, we're going to get into this in the Sugya Mirtz Hashem, that this is one category of muksa that Rav Shimon agrees, accepts, and that's called docha biyadayim. And this is a famous Sugya, again, keep it in mind, write a note for yourself, called Grogos Vitzimukim, in which he takes grapes and he deliberately, before Shabbos, climbs up to his roof where the sun is beating down, and he puts the grapes there in order to create raisins. And that's a case. What happens is that in the process, the grapes turn very sour. They're no longer edible. And even though eventually during the course of Shabbos, as the sun beats down, they become edible, they become raisins. But nevertheless, since he himself put the grapes on the roof, that's called Dechiyah B'Yadayim. So although Rav Shimon doesn't have muktzah in the sense that you don't have to go around preparing everything, and even things that you don't anticipate to use, you may use, and that's not muktzah. However, in a case where you yourself deliberately put something away, you locked it up for Shabbos, so to speak, and you don't anticipate using it, that's called Dechiya B'Yadayim. And that's completely mufka from Hachana. So it's not that Rav Yehuda doesn't require, it's not that Rav Shimon does away with the requirement of Hachana. The Pasuk says, V'chinu asher shayavi, you have to prepare things for Shabbos, but he always assumes there's a built-in Hachana. But if he's Dechiya B'Yadayim, then he absolutely rejects Hachana, and he says, this is put away for Shabbos. He puts such a volume of oil in the Ashishas, and he lights it before Shabbos. He has no hope. He's not holding out any hope for the candle to go out because there's so much oil in the Ashishas. Then he was Docha B'Yadayim, like the case of Grogos Vitzimukim, where he puts it up on the roof. That's what I think could help us at least get by this understanding at this level of our understanding of the Sugya. Now, if we didn't have already three shittas in this brisa, so we now have a fourth shita, and this is the son of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Eliezer Reb Shimon, Mistapik min haner hakova, u'min hashemen hametaftev, v'afilu b'shah shaner dolek. You see, Rabbi Eliezer is going way, way too far here, so to speak. Rabbi Shimon said that as long as the candle is active, or the flame is alive and well, forget it. Don't even go near this nair. You know, maybe he's afraid that you might put out the nair if you take out some of the oil. Or maybe this is a case of muktamach mas isur. I don't know, whatever it is. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer, and although he seems to embrace his father's sheet in general, but he goes a step further. He's rejecting Muktzah Machmas Mius. He's probably rejecting Migud Bein Hashmashos. And he's going even a step further. He says, even while the candle is lit, if there's oil that drips out of the candle, so you didn't violate any Melechus Kibu, you don't even dream of tampering with the oil and removing the oil, but the oil fell out on its own, then you're allowed to use and benefit from the oil that drips out of this candle, even though the candle is still burning right now. Now again, you know, the reasoning, the logic here of Rabbi Eliezer to go a step further must be based on something which is, what shall I say, that the way he puts the oil into the lamp is a way in which he really doesn't designate the oil for the fire. I mean, that sounds paradoxical. But what I mean to say is that this metzius, this reality, the scenario of a dripping lamp, you know, where the oil is dripping, that's not something in Rabbi Eliezer's frame of reference that's unusual. You know, it's almost built into the orchestration here. He orchestrates it in such a way, maybe puts in such a massive amount of oil that it sort of overflows. I don't know what, but the dripping of the oil out of the lamp is almost built into the very way he lights the candle, he lights the lamp. Omar Abaye immediately jumps to the last of the four shittas here, Rabbi Eliezer. And he says, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, Sovrala Kavua Bechad, Upola Galei Bechad. He accepts his father's shita with regard to one individual dimension of the halacha, but he rejects him on the other. Sovrala Kavua Bechad, he accepts his shita of Rabbi Shimon, his father, Delesle Mukta. In other words, unless something is absolutely mukta, he was makta be a dime, like we said, he himself put it away, then it's not mukta. Polgalei b'chad. Where is he arguing against his father? The ilu avu sover kava in lo kava lo. The ilu sover afagav de lo kava. Are you allowed to use the oil? Says Rabbi Shimon, as long as the lamp is lit and the flame is active, you're not allowed to use the oil, even though the oil drips out on its own. And Rabbi Eliezer will go a step further. He'll say that even while the lamp is lit, the fire, the flame is active, alive and well, nevertheless, you're allowed to enjoy the benefit of the oil that drips out of this nair. That much we understood. The question is, does Abaye enhance our understanding of Rabbi Eliezer Reb Shimon? Because again, you know, we know from Abaye, and we understood this from the Mishnah, that basically Rabbi Shimon holds that you're only allowed to benefit from leftover oil after the oil has after the flame is extinguished. What exactly is the issue here between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Eliezer? Now, Rabbi Shimon certainly rejects Migu, because when the candle is extinguished in the middle of Shabbos, he's allowed to enjoy the lamp and the oil. And we don't assume that since it was lit on Erev Shabbos, then it becomes muktzah for the entire balance of the Shabbos. So after the flame is extinguished, he's allowed to use the oil. Now Rabbi Eliezer allows you to use the oil even while the flame is burning, as if to say the oil is not muktzah. So in our attempt to understand Rabbi Eliezer, we'll first introduce the Maram, who says that hetero hu dafka b'ner hachava v'holech Shadayin lo kava legamrei. So the situation of this nair is such that it's on its way out. It's sputtering, it's kava v'holech. It's on its last leg, you might say. And we have here Shemen Anotef, the drippings, the oil that's dripping out, be'od shaner doleg, and Rabbi Eliezer is going to be matir. Now, Yesh Lahakshos, I'm going to read to you an overview of the Tosus Rid, one of the Rishonim. Madua Rabbi Shimon Oser Sashemen Anote Piot Shaner Dolik, Alo Kevon Shekvar, May Erev Shabbos Hoye Bedaito, Sheyitov Shemen Minaner. He says, how is he collecting these drippings? He must have put a receptacle under the Ner. Which means that he is actually anticipating that the shemen or some of the shemen will drip out of the lamp. And we thought that Rav Shimon is matir any situation of Yosheva Mitzapa when he anticipates that the drippings will come out. Why is it different? Why is this usur as long as the shemen is still actively producing the flame? V'yesh lomar, shaya b'dayto shiyitof min ha-shemen mat. There's no question that he expected that some minimal volume of shemen would drip out of the lamp, and that's why he put a kli, a receptacle, to receive those oil drippings. Ulam lo haya b'dayto sheyotuf mimenu harbe kolkach shiya royalist topic mimenu. He didn't expect that a significant enough volume of oil would come out that he could use it for his, I don't know, for his salad. Umashi niach taktav kli einzav k'day listapik menel k'day lahatzil samapa. So there's no proof from the fact that he put this receptacle, because that receptacle might be protecting that which is underneath the receptacle. Like, for example, let's say he's got his lamp on the table, he doesn't want the drippings to affect and destroy his tablecloth, so he puts something there. It would come out now, according to Tosis Rid, that even Rav Shimon would agree that you can enjoy the benefits of this droppings if he said on Erev Shabbos, he made a declaration that he expects quite a bit of shemen to come out, and therefore he's putting this receptacle in order to collect the shemen, which he wants to use for a salad. That would be mutter. Tosis here, Dira Masel Shebener, seems to indicate that even if he would make a condition explicitly and says, on Erev Shabbos, when he lights his lamp, he says, I intend to use the shemen, that's notev, that condition would not be meaningful. It's not valid. He's not allowed to take the shemen and enjoy it. Why? Because the very act of hadlaka, when he lights the ner, is called the dechia biyadayim. Now again, we said that Dechiyah B'Yadayim, according to Rav Shimon, is a full-fledged muktzah for the entire Shabbos. Well, Tosis is not operating with that assumption. Tosis seems to assume that it's a Dechiyah B'Yadayim as long as the light is burning. After the light is extinguished, there's no longer an Isur muktzah, and he can enjoy the benefit of the leftover shemen. And we don't know how to square that with Grogos Vitzimukim, because in Grogos Vitzimukim we said that since it was the Chiyah V'Yadayim of Shabbos, when he took these Grogos and he put them up on the top of the roof, then it's also even when it becomes raisins and is perfectly edible towards the balance of Shabbos. Nevertheless, it's also Midin Muktzah, because he was Maktzah B'Yadayim. So I think what's going on here is that there may be two types of Dechiyah B'Yadayim. There's a Dechiyah B'Yadayim where he anticipates that the situation will change. That's what we call Yoshev Mitzapa. And that's our case of the Ner. Again, it was Dechiyah B'Yadayim, Shiz Tosus. No Tanai is going to help as long as the Ner is Doluk. But nevertheless, he's Yoshev Mitzapa and he expects to get the Ner, the Shemen Shemener, after it extinguishes. Mashenki, in the case of Grogos Utsimukim, he doesn't think that the process of sweetening the Tzimukim, becoming Tzimukim, after it's bitter from the sun and so forth and so on, that beats down on the Groger, he doesn't anticipate that's going to happen before the end of Shabbos. Something happened, a miracle happened, and it was the process was sped up. But again, we still don't have an absolute grasp on the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Shimon, how he allows you to enjoy the benefit of these drippings even while the Ner is Dolek. The best we can do is to say that it's built in. It's as we said, it's according to the Maram's language, it's kava v'holech. So it's built into the process that there will be oil dripping out of this ner, and therefore that oil is not muktzah. I mean, we're reminded here just by sheer association of the sugya of Breira, you know, that we'll find out later on which oil was not really designated to burn. And l'mafreya, that oil was not muktzah. Now the Gemara wants to clarify the end of this brisa. So the brisa writes, Aval kos kara vashishas is ol yazizem mimkomon. My shona hani. Now, the Gemara thinks that this qualification is an hemshech, it's a continuation of the words of Rabbi Shimon. And although Rabbi Shimon is matir muktzah and tiltil aner, but not in the case of kos karen ashishas. So, Maishnal Hani, why should these be any different? Omer Ula, Seifa Son Rabbi Yehuda. You made a big mistake in assuming that this qualification of Kos Kara Shishas that's Asur is Rabbi Shimon. It's a Hemshech of Dir Rabbi Shimon. No, it's not. This goes back to the Rabbi Yehuda at the beginning of the Braisa, who says that you're not allowed to be Metaltil in their Yoshon. And you're not allowed to be metaltil and ashishis. So the Gemara rejects this. Maskif la marzutra. Marzutra asks Ula the following, raises the following objection. Ihachi, if this be the case, my, what is the word aval kos ukar ashishis ol yazizem? In other words, it was something that was mutter, and this is, however, this is asur. In the Resha, when we were talking about Rabbi Yehuda, then there was nothing mutal etaltel. So what's the avo? But this you're not allowed to be metaltel. That you would be, but this you can't. What do you mean? According to Rabbi Yehuda, everything is, you know, the whole nair is also metaltel. So what are you telling me about ashishis? That's also, in contrast, avo is also. El Omar Razuchi Leolam Rabbi Shimon. The key koshari Rabbi Shimon Biner Zuta De Daite Iluye Aval Hani De Nefishe Lo. When he puts a very limited volume of oil into the lamp, he assumes that it's going to go out on Shabbos. At some point, it would go out. It would be extinguished. That's called Daite Luye. That's a kind of Yoshevu Mitzap. But honey, in these cases, the Kos Kara Shishas, where there's a massive volume of oil that it could last throughout the Shabbos, like those Yahrzeit candles, you know, lo, he doesn't have Yoshev Mitzap. He assumes, and that would have been the case if the normal laws of nature would have kicked in, that this lamp is going to remain alive and active the entire Shabbos. So he was maximi daito. So even though Rabbi Shimon, as a general rule, does not accept mukta, even in case of isur, and we don't apply the principle of migu deskatzoy ben ashmoshos, but that's only because on Erev Shabbos he expects that during the course of Shabbos the isur would be complete, it would be terminated, and already on Erev Shabbos, he has a das that he will use this, let's say, this shemen after it will be extinguished. But if on Erev Shabbos, he would be absolutely convinced that the Isur of Hadlaka remained throughout the Shabbos because he put in such a volume of oil and some accident happened, you know, it's like a sukkah that all of a sudden fell apart because of a hurricane that wasn't anticipated. So that's not Yoshev Mitzape. Even Rav Shimon is moded that's Osur. And again, this Isur has nothing to do with Migu. It's just an Isur because on Erev Shabbos he was Mesiach Das, and his Hesek HaDas was for the entire Shabbos. He didn't anticipate that any oil would be left over and the lamp would be extinguished. So in this great, gigantic volume of oil, since his Das was to light it for the entire Shabbos, despite the fact that something happened miraculously to put out this lamp, it remains Asur. That's going to be the Shita of Marzutra in explaining Rav Shimon. So Gemara immediately asks for Atanya. We have a Braisa, Mosar Hashem Shebenev Shebekara. Asur v'Rav Shematir. So we see not only a classic ner, but even in the case of a kara, which presumably means it's a large bowl that has a very significant volume, and yet Rav Shimon is matir. Hosom kara dumya diner. There you take the word kara, there are two types of kara. So there's a small kara and a small bowl and a large bowl, right? There's a mama bear and papa bear and baby bear bowls, right? So what we're talking about here is kara dumya diner, right? The brisa in one breath mentions both ner and kara. Ner is classic and has a certain limited volume of oil in it. And kara is going to be a kara katana, a small bowl. And that's where Rav Shimon is mati. But hacha, in our brisa, that Rav Shimon is osa tilt to the kara, that's a case of kara dumya dekos, because kara is put together with kos and ashishis. This is a large bowl that contains a very significant volume of oil. And Rabbi Shimon is molded, it's also because he's not Daite Luye. Omer Avzera Pamot. Now we're talking about a small candlestick that's made of metal. Shedlikabo Beshabis is Ladiri Amatir Osur. Ladiri Oser Mutter. So now we're focusing on the sheet of Rabbi Meir. We really didn't approach Rabbi Meir and address Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was matir in our Mishnah, tiltal of a ner yoshan. Right? Because a ner yoshan, we said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, was muktzah machmas miyus, and Rabbi Meir rejects the category called muktzah machmas miyus. Now, what Rabbi Zeir wants to point out is that, okay, fine, there's no issue of muktzah machmas iser, but machmas mius, but we do have an issue of muktzah machmas iser, and therefore, even though Rabbi Meir would be matir in the case of tiltil of an er yoshan, that's because he didn't light it. But if he lit it, so forget about muktzah machmas mius, which Rabbi Meir never acknowledged, never accepted, but there is another issue of muktzah machmas iser, l'divrei oser. Now we get to Rabbi Yehuda. He said that there's a category called muktzah machmas mius in the case of a ner shalcheres yoshan is mutter. In the case of pamot, he's going to allow you to move it, because in a ner that's made of metal, there's no mius. You just rinse off the filth and it's clean. It shines clean. So you're allowed to move a pamot on Shabbos, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because we should not equate a pamot to a ner shalcheres. A ner shalcheres is mos, but a ner shalmateches is not mos, and therefore there's no isur tiltul. So the Gemara immediately wonders about this Rabbi Zeira. Lememo, are you telling me Rabbi Zeira, Rabbi Yehuda, muktzah machmas imius islay, muktzah machmas isu leslay? So even if he lit the pamot on Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos, it was lit, you're allowed to enjoy, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the oil, etc., and move around the pamot after it goes out on Shabbos? That's muktzah machmas isu. But Tanya, we have a braisa in which Rabbi Yehuda explicitly commits himself to the Isur Muktzah Machmas Isur. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kol Nero Shel Mateches Metaltel in Chutz Mi Ner Shel Dlikabo B'Shabbos. In other words, if it's a metal kind of a candlestick, that receptacle for the Ner, then it's not Muktzah Machmas Mius. And again, the Mepharshim say we're talking about Nechoshes, which is not Muktzah Machmas Mius. But nevertheless, if you lit the Ner in a pamot of mateches on Erev Shabbos, you're not allowed to be metaltal it, because that's already a different category of muktzah machmas isur. So you see explicitly from this braisa, Rabbi Yehuda has a more stringent view with regard to muktzah machmas isur. He basically accepts both muktzah machmas isur and muktzah machmas mius. So how are we meant to understand Rabbi Zeira? The way we have Rabbi Zeira in this version, again, the Gemara is going to rewrite the script, it would seem that he is matir, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if the ner is doluk, as long as it's not a mius. And that doesn't make any sense because Rabbi Yehuda explicitly accepts Muktzah Machmas Isur. Now again, I tend to doubt whether there was even a Havamina that Rabbi Zera would allow you in the case of a Ner of Pamot, where there's no Muktzah Machmas Mius, to move the Ner or enjoy the Shemen that drips out of there while it's burning. But what we're talking about is the Muktzah Machmas Isur, that since you're not allowed to, you know, tamper with and touch this lamp on Erev Shabbos if it's lit, therefore there's an Isur of Migu Diskatsoi for the balance of Shabbos even after it's extinguished. Here's where the Gemara thinks that maybe Rabbi Zera could be accused of interpreting Rabbi Yehuda as allowing it after it goes out. Eli Itmar, Hachi Itmar. Now the Gemara rewrites Rabbi Zera in such a way that he could be reconciled with this price, and that is on Rabbi Zera Pamot Shed Liku Olav B'Shabbos L'Divrei Hakol Asur. Everybody would agree, even Rabbi Meir would agree, that there is such an element or a category of Muktzah called Muktzah Machmas Isur. And therefore, if you lit this for Shabbos, then it's Muktzah. But lo idliku olav, what happens if he didn't use it? He wants to now use the lamp. I don't know what. Use it as a bowl to eat his cereal. Right, the lamp meaning the round part of the receptacle part for the oil and the wick. Is divrei hakol mutar. This is what Rabbi Zera wants to be mechadesh. That since it's made of matechas, it's made of a metal substance, it's not mos. And even though it's yashan, it's been used in the past, but it's not being used today on this particular Shabbos. Now we can use it for whatever. And even Rabbi Yehuda, who accepts both Muktzah Machmas Mius and Muktzah Machmas Isur, he would allow you to move this because there's no fire going. And it's not Muktzah Machmas Isur. And it's not Muktzah Machmas Mius because it's made of metal. Okay, then now we're going to end here on the bottom of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. We're up to Amar Rabbi Yehuda, two lines up from the bottom, the two dots.